Welcome back to another episode of How Real Estate Changed My Life. I've gone and visited everybody I possibly can I know can say honestly that real estate has changed their life. And today I've got Chandler Crouch, and he is by far the most visible person when it comes to fighting for people's property taxes. So we'll get to that in a little bit. So you've got to listen to the last half of this because Chandler has a lot of valuable information to share. But I know you have a great story. You're a real estate broker yourself. You've got a great shop. You all do good work for Tarrant County, maybe more than Tarrant County. I'm not sure, but you're going to tell me all about it. But I'd love to hear your story and how real estate changed your life. So let's go into it.
I'll just tee off. Yeah. And I think real estate has not only changed my life, but in many ways, it's become my life. It's you know, waking up, it's real estate until I go to bed. You know, I've got family in there. I've got my faith. And then beyond that, it's, you know, it's my hobbies. It's everything. So whenever I got started, I was fresh out of dropping out of school and just lucky to be sober, to be honest with you, and trying to figure out direction in life, and found Jesus and got my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, Megan. And then I set aside a couple week window where I was literally just praying, God, what do you want me to do? It was a new faith, new direction. And, about that time I went in and paid my rent at my apartment complex, and the landlord said, hey, I'm starting a real estate company. Would you have any interest in joining? And, I was just lucky to be sober. Anyway, he introduced me to a guy who ended up being my first real estate broker. But my first steps into this were not focused on being a real estate agent at all. In fact, some of the seeds that were planted in high school come from reading the Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki book. And I mean,
I'm sure
you hear that.
It's a reoccurring, right? On this episode, I think we recorded 12 people so far, and at least half of mentioned that book, got them started.
Crazy. It changes the way you think and the way you see the world. And once you see it that way, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
And that was a big part of my
journey.
Yeah. Whenever I was in school, I just was sitting there in class thinking, this is not going to get me to where I want to go. And so I might as well just party. And that was kind of, you know, it wasn't a bad conclusion. It wasn't going to get me anywhere, but at least I was going to have fun while I was there, you know?
I think that it's too many people don't have a vision or a roadmap of where they could be that's better than where they're at. And I think that's why they just, hey, let's just have a good time. Like,
absolutely. And just to, you know, toot your horn a little bit and to talk about that book, it's if all you see are the examples right around you, your father, your neighbors, the people you go to church with or at the grocery store, grew up with at school, you might not have another example to see outside of your current reality. And Absolutely. So a book like that can broaden your horizons, show you there's a different way of life, podcasts like this where people are coming on telling your story. I mean, to me, my story, I'm living a dream come true, no doubt about it. But you put me in the right frame of mind, I'm like, this is nothing special. This is just normal. It's just a normal Friday. It's just what it is, you know? But to somebody that didn't think that that's possible, like, that book was to me what this podcast could be to somebody. And I realized that. I think it's super valuable what you're doing.
This morning alone, I had two gentlemen reach out to me from listening to just a couple of episodes that are already live. And we're talking about, man, that made me think I'm not getting any younger. And then both of them were talking about rental properties and what they're going to do when their parents are already at that age where it's kind of like, hey, what do we do with them in their home? Because they already have grown kids and everything. So it's been great feedback that people have listened to our stories on this podcast and made them think and like, hey, maybe they'll pick up that book and read it.
Well, and I think part of the value that somebody might get from my walk is just, I'm going to be open and honest about my faith and the fact that I was lucky to be sober. And I started super dumb, like super dumb. Like whenever I started, I didn't know what the word mortgage meant. Honestly, the game Monopoly messed me up. You flip the card over and you get money and it's like a mortgage. It didn't make sense to me. I didn't know what the difference between title and deed and these very basic things were, which are kind of complicated if you haven't been exposed to it. And so starting at that point, my first entrance into this was probably Tom Vu seminar commercials on TV, and then Carlton Sheets, and then Russ Whitney and Robert Allen. And I started going to these seminars and really getting excited about the potential that real estate could have for my life, and the Robert Kiyosaki mindset of financial freedom being where your passive income exceeds your expenses, and you could checkout of your day-to-day job. You're not trading dollars for hours, and you can go and you can, mm-hmm. you know, have this big business or this investment that when you check out and then and leave for a couple weeks or a month and you return to it, and then it's bigger and more profitable than mm-hmm. it was whenever you went on vacation. I mean, these ideas are just like mind-boggling that it's even possible. And it's like, I'm like, I want that. I want more of it. And that's where I started, though. Mm-hmm. I caught the bug, and I want freedom. I believe that freedom is a big principle for me and just a core value. And it's like, that's what I want. I want more of it.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's great. And you know, I get this a lot. It's like, well, my kid didn't go to college, so I don't know, or my kids need to go to college. Did you have to go to college to do what you do?
Oh, gosh, no.
Exactly.
In fact, one of the biggest benefits that I have in my career is that, you know, blessing or a curse, at the time, it felt like I was screwing up in life. I was going against everything that everybody told me I needed to do to be successful, right. Which was go get a job, get a wife, get a house, graduate college, get a dog, you know, and like mm-hmm. all these different things, start having kids. And I was like, again, barely sober, partying, having fun, screwing around, trying to find direction, and then getting into real estate. And nobody approved of my path. I just said, you know, if I'm just going to be honest with myself, and I don't want to waste time, and if I'm going to waste time, I at least don't want to go into debt like crazy doing mm-hmm. it. I want to get somewhere. So then my number one focus when I started was to get into real estate investing. And I quickly learned that going to these seminars that I was going to, that most of the people in the room weren't actually doing it. Right. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to be different. I'm young. I didn't have any money whatsoever. In fact, I remember I found the old list of goals that I'd written out. And at the same time, I'm really glad my mentor at the time told me to do this. But he said, write down a list of your assets. And one of those assets was, I have like $6,000 in unsecured, you know, credit that I can get. And at the time, I was like $2,000 in debt. And I saw that as an asset. But that's where I came from. I still had student loan debt. And, you know, one thing led to another. I just said, you know what? I'm going to take everything that I'm learning in these seminars, and I'm just going to try it. I'm going to buy short sales, and I'm going to do owner finance. And back when I started, lease options were all the rage. And then you had sandwich lease options. And then you had, you know, contract for deed was kind of on the way out whenever I started. But now it's turned into wrap mortgages and subject to and owner finance and all this stuff. I tried all of that stuff. I did at least one or two transactions with all of those things. Mm-hmm. And learned some very valuable lessons, you know, and I'll just hit straight to the punchline. A lot of those techniques are sexy little techniques that people use to sell seminars. Mm-hmm. And what I found out at the end of the day is that the way my moral compass is, it doesn't matter if my credit's on the line or someone else's or what's happened. If I stared someone in the eye and I said, I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do it. So there's no such thing as a liability-free transaction. If I'm buying a house, I'm going to own that house till I sell it. And so the overlying principle that I learned, no matter what technique I'm using to buy or sell a house or whatever, my income has got to be significantly higher than my expenses. You got to buy low, sell high, or buy and rent out for something higher than your expenses. And at the time when I had zero income, no money, that's what I needed at that time, because I was trying to make real estate my number one, you know, income. And that lasted. I bought and sold a bunch of houses. In fact, I lived in an apartment. What shaped my mindset was the book Rich Dad Poor Dad. So I wanted to minimize my liabilities. So I sold my big shiny red truck. I bought a Geo Metro.
You haven't seen one on the road in a long time.
Nope, but it was an awesome car, like 55 miles of the gallon. And I bought it for like $2,000-$3,000. It was awesome. And then I rented an apartment, was $365, all bills paid. And it was not in a good part of town.
Of course.
And while I was there, in those circumstances, I was buying and selling houses. And I was the only person going back home who had a crackhead as a neighbor mm-hmm. from the MHMR department that had a government, you know, Section 8 housing voucher that's paying their rent. And their neighbor was a real estate investor, and that's the way it started. So
that's awesome.
The first chapter.
Yeah. So what was your primary path? Was it being a real estate agent or investor?
You know, the reason why I became a real estate agent is because I thought, I love real estate. I want real estate to be my career. I felt like that was like the thing God laid in my lap. And, you know, the more I learned about it, the more I fell in love. I had to figure out a way to make an income and get an education. So I said, you know, I'm going to get my real estate license, and that's how I'm going to do it. That way I can do real estate 24/7. And so I started buying and selling houses, doing all these different things. I started buying REO properties. Mm-hmm. foreclosures. And then I stumbled on to, and then I think after a couple of years, I just reflected and said, where's the most profitable deals that I've been dealing with? And it was HUD foreclosures, HUD REOs. And so I just went super deep into that, developed a system to research every single HUD property twice a week. And back then the volume of HUD homes was really high. There were just hundreds on the market. They were going under contract, coming out on the market.
There was an amazing window of time for HUDs.
It was amazing.
They were frustrating to do. The title companies were just, that was a racket during that time.
Oh man, they made bank and they gave horrible service.
Oh yeah. So how were you financing them? Or was it all cash? What was the story on that?
I had some private investors private lenders, just normal people I knew that were lending me money. I got pre-qualified with a couple of hard money lenders. And then I got there were some little local banks. There was just at the time, Justin State Bank was a bank where they did their loan to value ratio different. So they would look at the purchase price plus the rehab cost and look at the entire project and say, okay, you've got to have a certain percentage of that entire project as your cash, so maybe 80% loan to value of that entire thing. Mm-hmm. Well, if that entire project cost was more than the purchase price, then I could purchase the property and get cash back at closing and have a little bit for repairs or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so there were just a number of different things, but the problem was at that time to buy a HUD home, you couldn't use owner financing or you couldn't do it subject to. So a lot of the things that were taught about in the seminars, you couldn't do in a HUD home. You just had to buy it straight up, free and clear title from day one. And so it limited the amount of properties I could buy. So then I put my realtor hat on and said, man, I'm finding a bunch of really good deals every single week. And I'm only able to buy a couple here and there because it was my primary source of income. I was pretty limited. I didn't have any other options at the time. So I bought as many as I could and I sold the rest and got a real estate commission. For people out there that wonder, should you get a real estate license or should you not? Or they're thinking about wholesaling or whatever. To me, when you have a buyer and a seller and you put them together and you make some money, whether you're assigning a contract or making a real estate commission, by the, function of it, maybe the paperwork and the vocabulary is different, but by the function of it, it's about the same thing. It's just, that was the way that I looked at it was I'm going to find good deals. I'm going to find investors. I'm going to put them together. I'm going to make a chunk of money. I did it using my real estate license and I used that to earn some money so that I could go back and buy more HUD homes. And I juiced that as hard as I could juice it until about 2010 when HUD changed everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like the spigot got turned off.
Well, the spigot went from guys like you and me being able to purchase to big institutions being able to buy blocks of them at a time by the hundreds.
Yeah.
And so we got out. I mean, we just weren't allowed to play that game. So we had to kind of change our model. But no, I think that having the real estate license has been invaluable because it allows you to make an income more ways and to allow you to, make a little juice when you didn't have an orange to squeeze.
Absolutely. The way that I looked at it, and I had a bunch of investors as clients at the time, and that was really valuable because I got to see different philosophies and different strategies on how they were able to do it. And then, and got to see what's successful and what's not. Almost everybody, it seemed like there were a couple different camps of people. There were the people that had a great paying job and they were using real estate as a side hustle almost. There's something to build for retirement. And they didn't care as much about cash flow. They didn't have to get great cash flow. They could buy it for asset protection, for retirement planning or for a tax shelter or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I saw that. But for everybody else, it's kind of like if you weren't a realtor, you were involved in the rehab process. If you weren't involved in the rehab process, you might have been somebody that was in on the financing side. It's kind of like everybody that seemed to have success had a hat on. And being a realtor is just another job in the process. Mm-hmm. It's a job that you make a fee. Some people view it as expensive. Some people say, you know what? I'm not a realtor. I don't want to do that. I want to be the investor. And that person, they might fit another profile, but that's how it worked for me. That was the path that was carved out.
You got to the point. Now you're a broker, right? And you have a whole office of agents that are soldiers out there working for people.
Yep. And it's just one thing's led to another. Mm-hmm. When the HUD thing dried up, well, here's one thing I just want to mention. I think that somebody that wants their primary source of income to be a real estate investor, that there's no better place to start than single family residential because it's super forgiving. It doesn't matter how many mistakes you make. It's still really hard to lose a ton of money. It's really hard for that to cause you to go bankrupt. I remember there was one of the last deals that I bought. was a house out in Rowlett, which was like a 50-minute drive on a Sunday morning with no traffic. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lesson with that one. Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. It was right around the 2008 debacle, or am I even saying that right? Yeah, whatever it was. Yeah. The real estate market changed, financing changed. So the number of buyers that could qualify for that house dropped to next to nothing. I found some foundation problems I didn't account for, all sorts of repairs I didn't account for. And it was a absolutely nightmare, horrible deal. And I lost like $400 at the end of the day. Yeah. And I'm like, God bless real estate.
Real estate. Yeah. One of my mentors early on told me real estate's one of these things that it takes a little while to lose the money, because a mortgage payment's once a month. If you're day trading stocks, you can lose it all in a day or whatever. You know, there's all these other things that you can do and you can lose your money really fast. Real estate, if you own it, like you can outrun it. Like, you know, if it's a few hundred bucks a month, negative cash flow, you can go out and work an extra shift or Absolutely. Something to make it happen until the house value catches up or something of that nature. But yeah, you can outrun those.
And if you have to dump it, you just turn. I mean, look at all your buyers are like normal people. This is not, when you're in multifamily or commercial, the buyer pool is significantly less. And so
it's just a
little harder to bail out if you have to bail out. But single family residential, you learn, it's a great place to get an education, and it's a much more liquid, and it's something that is not going out of style. You know, people need a place to live, and it's much better than in the stock market or any other investment I could put my finger on. And so what I preach, but at the same time, cash flow, it just kind of depends on how you buy it. But anyway, I'll finish my story real quick. If I wanted to make a living with single family residential properties, it was very important to get a system together and to have a consistent flow. There's no reason to sell your morals, to sell or to take undue risks on any one deal, because no one deal is going to make you rich. Mm-hmm. It's that deal might give you an education, and the education you get will make you rich. But it's about having a systematic process, repeatable process that you can grow on. You figure it out. Yeah, honestly, part of the problem is realizing that real estate is not passive by nature. You can make it passive, but what you have to do to make it passive is you need to hire a realtor, you need to hire a property manager, you need to hire somebody to fix up the property and somebody to manage it. If you're not doing that, then it's going to end up on your shoulders. But once you realize that, you account for the expense you're going to have and you plan properly, that you can create a systematic, repeatable process where wealth is built, and it's something it ends up being an enormous payoff come retirement time. But I'm sure.
I love this. It's great. You're passionate, and we'll probably get to it in a second, but you're also passionate about helping people. And that I think also lends to being a real estate agent too, and being a broker and some of your tax protest things too. But I think that's great. And I think you're doing a great job of explaining how real estate's changed your life, in that it provided you a profession. It also provided you financial, I don't know if freedom's the term, but a freedom, stability, and a long-term plan. And kind of financially, you aren't going to be as stressed as maybe somebody that didn't find real estate. And I think Absolutely. That book that you mentioned, Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, that is a mind-blowing book for some people. And they just don't see it until you read it. And I encourage everybody to read that book.
It's simple. But it's full of wisdom. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem, is somebody that's really, really smart, they'll read that book and be like, this is a stupid common sense story or whatever, but there's such a difference between what's right and what's not quite as right. And mm-hmm. it's like, when you have your principles, when you have right principles and you live by them, they're not something that's in style. It's not a fad. They're time tested. They're something that withstands market cycles and that sort of thing. And when you can build your business or your career path on solid principles like what are in that book, and it's not perfect, but it's mind boggling. It's a great start. But yeah, it's something. And I'm glad you mentioned something about helping people. That's the way I'm wired. I've already mentioned faith. I mean, this is kind of the thing where I want to help people. I think there's more in life than just getting a paycheck. And so one of the lessons I learned investing was, it's not a charity. It's not something where I'm not going to go out and start buying houses from people in need just because they're in need. I have to be able to make a profit, or else I'm not using the resources that I've been given in a smart way. And they're going to disappear. And it doesn't mean I shouldn't be benevolent. It just means that if I don't get the profit right, I can't be benevolent. If I find a home seller in distress, yes, I want to help them, but I have to be able to run my business in a profitable way. Or if my tenant is late on their rent because they lost their job or somebody died, oh my gosh, I'm like, that'll bring me to my knees and I want to give them everything. But it doesn't mean that I have to do that at the sacrifice of the profitability of my company. What it means is I need to evaluate all my charitable opportunities and figure out how the profit in my company can be best reinvested among my family and closest friends and the people in greatest need. And I would say from that point, I've taken that attitude and that desire, those principles, and been able to pour that into what I'm doing now. And so I've also figured out how you can lose a bunch of money in real estate. And that's what took me from the real estate area of being an investor to the realtor side. And I'll be happy to tell that story.
Sure. And let's talk about that. But it reminds me of, you know, the parable of the talents. And, you know, you're given these resources and what are you going to do with them? So
that's it.
And you know, my thing is like, hey, let's see. You know, giving somebody free rent, is that really helping them, or is it helping? Are there better ways to help that person? And so,
are you being a good steward?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. So yeah, that, and I'm going to do a real quick plug on my nonprofit that we started this year. And it's Investing Into Tomorrow. And what that is we are investing in our students that are right now, you know, the high school or young, you know, students that are like, maybe college is their thing. Maybe it's not, doesn't really matter. But we want these students to come out with the tools to be a productive person straight out of high school. And, you know, we're working with KCAL this year on raising funds to help support these kids, whether it's maybe helping them buy their cosmetology kit that they need. It's $1,200. So it's not cheap. And, you know, for some people, it's like, hey, do I pay rent or do I pay for my kids' ability to make a profession when they get out of high school? Welding certificates, HVAC tools. A kid comes out of school, you know, it's about $800-$900 investment just in the tools so they can go get a job. And so we're coming in to help them provide those resources for those students that will help set them up for a good future. And I think that's a good use for the talents. So that's my little plug.
That's so awesome.
We'll talk about that some other time, but I just want to throw that out there. I think there's a lot of ways people can help people get ahead. I'm a big, hey, give the guy a fishing pole. Don't just give him fish.
Absolutely. My gosh. And I think you're kind of on the cutting edge of this trend of, as AI takes off, all the professions you just mentioned, I think are going to become even more valuable. And so those professions, I know whenever I was in school, it was like, but working with your hands is not that glorious. I think the future is working with your hands and doing stuff in the physical world, with real estate, with cosmetology, all that stuff. You can't AI your way out of those industries. Right.
Yeah, you can't outsource that to China or India or somewhere else. So that's why in my businesses, I've got a few. A lot of them are focused on home services because that's not going anywhere, and you have to have it. The problem is it is labor intensive. The infrastructure costs a little bit more than, you know, having an office with computers. But I think it's something that's going to stick around. But I want to hear. Let's talk about property taxes, because that's a big part when you buy a rental property. That's a big piece of your expenses. And you have to plan for that. Some people say, oh, well, I'm not buying in Texas because of property taxes. Well, there's reasons for that. You know, whether it's we don't have state income tax, or maybe that's how we fund our schools or hospitals or, you know, things of that nature. So let's talk about what you're doing now in helping people with their property taxes, because I've heard the term called micro celebrity. Now, I'm going to say that's what you are. You're a micro celebrity for our community. And I think you're the white knight that's coming through that's helping people. So let's talk about that. How'd you get into that? And what are you doing?
Well, so, and I teased a little something about how the transition that got me on the path that I'm on, it did involve losing a bunch of money in a real estate related venture. And so I want to fulfill that tease. What I did was I had somebody, an investor, buy like 30 houses from me. It was insane.
That's a lot.
I thought it was a lot of houses, and he needed money, wanted to invest in something, who knows what. And so he came to me and said, hey, I got an investment opportunity. I'll give you a second lien position on this commercial property out in the boonies. And I trusted the guy. And he showed me an appraisal for $1 million. And I thought, oh gosh, if I let you borrow all this money, I'm secured in this building where I would be into this property for $200,000. It's worth $1 million. The best thing you could do is default on this. So yeah, absolutely, I'm going to do it. And long story short, it didn't work out the way I thought. And I stuck my neck into something that I didn't do my own due diligence in by investigating the appraiser, hiring my own appraiser. That was a mistake. Turns out they had side deals going on. And then this was a commercial property out in the middle of nowhere. I lent money on. They didn't ever pay me back. And the money that I lent was all borrowed money to begin with. And so after that, I said, okay, I've got to have a come to Jesus moment where all of a sudden Dave Ramsey's live debt-free plan started sounding very, very appealing. And so I had a massive career pivot where I said, okay, if I'm going to live past this moment and continue to have my marriage intact, I've got to change my value set. So it was no longer borrow money, buy real estate. For me as a self-employed person, I had to have some area of stability in my life. And I don't think everybody has the same need as me. I'm very risk tolerant. And so I just said, for me and my family, I have to stop borrowing the money and figure out how to get a source of income. And then I'll come back to the real estate investing and, sure. and do it like some of those other clients, buy yep. on the side. And that's my path. That's my, so.
There's a million paths and none of them are wrong.
Yep.
Which one's better yep. for you?
Absolutely. I think if I was wired different, I would have got into syndication, joint ventures. I would have figured out a way to not have to borrow the money, but still get the funding, mm-hmm. partnering or what. There's ways to do it where you can leverage through, you know, get the leverage side without having mm-hmm. to borrow the money. And yep. so I just didn't have, my bills needed me. So I had to figure out how to go make an income. Mm-hmm. And here we are. So I just switched gears and went into building a traditional brokerage business like a normal realtor. I took a gamble. I said, I'm going to try and find valuable needs in our community. And if I can fulfill those needs, if they're valuable enough, I'm going to just take a step in faith that the value is going to come back to me and mm-hmm. somehow I'm going to pay the bills. I tried a couple things, did a couple things, and then all of a sudden somebody needed help protesting their property tax value. That was back in 2017. I helped them free of charge, just as a way to help provide value, giving back, turned out to be a valuable need. And yeah. it turned out to be a huge need. I didn't set out to help people with property taxes. It just was the need that landed on my plate. I helped one person, made a video. The video went viral, helped another person. And then before you know it, I just prayed to God, said, God, give me the opportunity to help people. And whatever happens, I'm going to say yes. And I've been saying yes ever since. And so yeah. that started in 2017. In 2000, this year, I protested for 37,000 people.
That's
and
awesome.
Did it all free of charge. We do accept donations. I realized if I'm going to continue to solve this problem, then I've got to be able to fund it on a level beyond the rate that my business is growing. Mm-hmm. I got to accept donations. Since then, I've been instrumental in helping change some laws.
Yeah, very much.
Improve property tax reform is awesome. Is it like a gift from God again? Just doors open. I say yes. There's
when
legislators.
When you help people, it comes back.
It does. It does. And I've just had the opportunity to be in some of those inner circle meetings where they're like, you've got experience protesting. You got a different, you know, vantage point on this. How do these laws need to be reformed? I'm constantly disappointed with the stomach that our legislators have to be leaders and have courage and step out to do the change that we really need. We've only been putting band-aids on it so far, but I'll try and solve the problem. I'll expose corruption at our local appraisal district, which has been happening. And then I'm going to help as many people as I can in the meantime. And so how about this? I know we need to get to some nuts and bolts property sure. tax stuff so I can teach some people, you know, how to save mm-hmm. some money maybe,
yeah.
especially on investment properties. Yeah. I'll try and get to the nugget of how people can get value out of this that will directly relate to your bottom line in the quickest path possible. But I got to set a little bit of the stage. So our property tax system now, it screws the single family residential property owner, landlord, worse than just about everybody else.
Sure, it
and
does.
The reason is because the single family residential property owner that owns a property as their primary residence, they can get a homestead exemption on that property. So the homestead exemption, one benefit from that is that it's capped at a 10% gain per year. Well, single family residential without the homestead, you don't have that cap. So it's really where when the homestead exemptions cap it off, that means that there's a certain amount of tax that would be generating property tax revenue that's not being taxed. And so it doesn't mean that the revenue demand, the need for that revenue, it doesn't mean it's gone. It just means somebody else has got to pay it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, on the flip side of that, commercial property owners have I'm going to say big business, small business, mm-hmm. they're getting hosed too, for sure. Big business property owners have skyscrapers in downtown Dallas, downtown Fort Worth, downtown Houston, where they're multi-million dollar properties that you got the Walmarts, the SpaceX, the Best Buy, all these big businesses. The way that they protest is they utilize a couple provisions of the property tax code that allows them to go sue the appraisal district and win virtually every single time. So over the course of a 5-year period where the value of Walmart's went down 1.5%, down. Mm-hmm. At that same time period, single family residential homes were increasing by 50%.
Yeah.
It's insane. And so the homestead people, they've got their protection, which we're still getting hosed. We're still getting screwed. But the people that have no protection at all are the single family residential property owners without the exemption. And the truth is, if you're buying homes or houses as an investment and you've got to do it to have some kind of profit, and to make sure you're at least not going too far upside down cash flow wise, yes, it puts the squeeze on landlords. But what the legislators don't understand is that's all passed through. It goes straight to the tenant. Mm-hmm. And so at the same time where we're encouraging homeownership for tenants to get out of their rentals to go buy homes, we're also basically guaranteeing that they can never get ahead by saving money because the rent's constantly going up because we're having to pass through the expense of the property taxes. They can't get ahead. Real estate prices are taking off. They're going sky high. So at the same time, they can't save for the down payment, and the gap between where they're at and where they need to be to buy a house, it's growing and growing and growing. And it's a big problem. At the core of it, you've got two things. One, everybody's getting a break somehow. The commercial property owners can sue, slash their values. Residential gets the exemptions. At the same time, when the way that these properties are valued is through a sales comparison approach and not an income approach, then what that means is your revenue may not be going up at all, or it might be going up much slower than the value of your house. And when you're being taxed on unrealized gains, that's a big problem. The same problem doesn't exist in commercial. So here's what you
do.
If, especially if you have multiple units, if you can afford to sue the appraisal district, sue the appraisal district. That's the way to go. If you can't sue them and you don't want to pay the exorbitant fees to do that, then the thing to do would be to get out a Google property tax evidence affidavit. Get that out. Next time your property tax value notice comes in the mail, go ahead and see if you can get the reduction you want by driving down to the appraisal district and negotiating informally. If you want to put the time into going to the protest hearing, that's fine. Go ahead and do that. But if you want to fight like the big boys, like the commercial property owners, all you do is get that property owner evidence affidavit, fill it out, send it in. They will do an actual formal protest without you having to physically be there. After they do that protest, they'll send you the documents in the mail and showing you what the result is. And at that point, you file for arbitration. And arbitration is going to cost you $500 as a deposit. As long as you're successful, you'll get a refund on $450 of that $500. And so at the net cost is it'll cost you $50 as long as you're successful. And then you go to town fighting in arbitration. They become much, much more negotiable in arbitration. And so a lot of the big business guys, they have to go through the same path. They do the same exact thing. It's just instead of arbitration, they sue. Arbitration is one of those things where it's like giving the small guy the ability to do the same thing the big guy does for a fraction of the price. It may be marginally less effective than suing, but the same dynamics exist. The appraisal district will have a, or the comptroller will send you paperwork after you file for arbitration. They'll set aside a certain window where it's designated for you to negotiate with the appraisal district. If the appraisal district loses and it goes to the actual official arbitration hearing, the appraisal district will have to pay for all of the fees, and they can't afford to do that. So they will settle with you. There are, I could go into deeper water, but that's the best shortcut I can give you.
Those are great nuggets.
There's two types of protests. There's a market value protest where you're saying my home is not worth what you, I couldn't sell my house for what you're proposing.
Right. Cause you live in it and there's furniture in there. You got nicks on the walls. You got kids that live, tore up carpet, whatever.
Nope. Condition is the big one. And they can't really fight you on condition. If you go out and get, you know, you haven't fixed up your house. It's in shambles. Yeah. You can show them the condition isn't what they think. And that will, that's great evidence. Beyond that, that's the market value protest. There's another type of protest called an unequal protest. The unequal protest is how the big business guys get away with murder. If you research the property tax code, I wish I had a provision for you right off the hand, but if you just research unequal property tax protest, Texas property tax code, you'll find the provision. There's three different types of unequal protests, and the appraisal district is really only familiar with one of those. The other two types allow you to get comps from other market areas, basically select your own market area. As long as you have a representative group of properties, then you can justify that this group over here is getting taxed at this level. When the home sold at this level, or the actual values at this level, therefore there's this amount of discount below, then that discount should be applied to my property. And then that's how the big business guys get away with murder, is they'll use that type of argument. To be really honest with you, I've been helping single family residential primary residents, so I'm not as well versed on that. I'm just giving the hint out there that if you want to go chop your value obscene levels and get the biggest reduction you can, that's the path. And if I had a whole bunch of single family residential properties, I would either do that arbitration on every single one, or it is possible, this is fringe, and somebody, if somebody really knows property tax, they'll probably disagree with me, but I know I'm right. If you had the same exact evidence for all of your single family residential properties, you could file one lawsuit, use the identical evidence for every one, then you only end up having to file one lawsuit. And you package them all together, and you do the same thing. You'll negotiate a settlement prior to the lawsuit. To be really honest with you, like this uniform and equal provision, I'm not as well versed on. I just know that that's what you do. And so there's the path for you. And over the course of this next year, I'm going to figure it out more and more. And then we're going to help a lot more people. And yeah. I'll share the information. I could care less. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is not right. What's going on with property taxes? And I'm here to help. And
just on the surface, commercial's out there to generate revenue. Like they're in the business to make money. Grandma that has a house down the street from me, she's not out there to make money. She's just out there trying to survive. But she still has a $6,000 tax bill that
crazy
gets eaten up really fast on from her Social Security check.
And when grandma, like this happens in South Lake, more affluent areas, it's so tragic what happens. Somebody bought a house for $120,000 back in 1995, mm-hmm. and they made a conservative decision to buy well within their means. Mm-hmm. And South Lake happened around them, where property values just skyrocket. And it's great. Everybody wants a good area. But mm-hmm. when everybody else around you has the money to fix up their houses, and they're tearing down old houses, rebuilding new, and you're not doing that in your house, your grandma just wants to stay there.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden 2020 rolls around and that house is worth $1.4 million and the tax bill is off the charts.
30 grand.
And she didn't do anything to improve her property or do anything. It's like the deck is stacked against you. It's like you're mm-hmm. getting squeezed out. And
I've seen numerous people have to move out of their home that they've raised their kids in. That should be, there's something fundamentally wrong.
It is.
With a family that's been raised in a home, they've had it for so long, and then they're getting forced out of their home. Where do they go? Where do they go?
And here's the thing, man. This is where the conservatives and the liberals need to come together and get something mm-hmm. fixed, or get this problem fixed, because you'll hear the liberal side talk about gentrification, and you'll hear about the conservative side saying that grandma bought with conservative principles. This is her home. This is life, liberty, property. This is what America is all about, and the government shouldn't tax you out of your home. It's different angles on the same exact problem, and we're all on an equal playing field, and it's the people against the establishment, the weak leaders that we have that don't have the courage to step out and make a risky decision or stick their neck out to truly reform our laws to come up with a real solution. Instead, the stomach for just get a real solution isn't there. And so they just keep coming up with Band-Aid solutions. And we need leaders to step up, and we've got to have property owners unify and demand change. And unfortunately, I'm really happy with the legislation that they passed because it was needed and it was really very, very significant. It was top notch, except for the fact that it's a Band-Aid. It's a top notch Band-Aid. We just kicked the can down the road. And now that when this problem comes back 2 years from now, it's going to be a non-issue. 2 years after that, we're going to be at another breaking point. It's not going to be a non-issue. They're going to have no stomach for change in 2 years because they did something so major this year. In 2 years, they're going to come back and they're going to say, well, it's all brand new legislation. We need to see how this plays out. So 2 more years from that, we're going to be at another crisis level where reform is needed. And I would not doubt it if we get another Band-Aid where they're picking winners and losers instead of having a system that's actually fair and protecting our God-given right to own property in America. But anyway, whatever.
I hear you. I mean, it is sad. You never own something.
Yeah.
You never own a home because the government's always going to come after the taxes. So it's unfortunate. But that it's the system set up that way. And hopefully they can figure out a way to kind of make it to where it's a happy medium somewhere. But
I think it's really, really easy to identify the problems, and it's very difficult to get a consensus on the solutions. Mm-hmm. And somebody's going to be mad for sure. And mm-hmm. It's not going to be a unanimous vote no matter what happens. And so you just have to have leaders that say, you know what, they've got to be able to do their job as politicians to get people to come together enough to have some real change. And I've heard of all the ideas out there, but you know, I'd say, let's just bring it right back to square one. Our faith and hope cannot be put in our legislators or our government. Now, at the same time, our government does allow us the ability to own property, and there are certain rights that come with that. And so it's all the more important as this world is going into chaos. It's like, you know, who even knows what stock is? You know, when you have micro trading and all these weird things that are going on, let's look at what we know to be true. And that's real estate. I can see it. I can touch it, see it, feel it. It's finite. It's going up in value in Texas, at least. Mm-hmm. And this is where we can plant our future and build for ourselves. We've got to take care of our family. We've got to take care of our own and look out for each other. And it's not going to come from help anybody's going to give you. You got to pull up your bootstraps and dive into real estate. It'll change your life and it'll give you protection. And it's we're on the right path. I know that. Yeah. I just want to go
I always tell people, like, with a rental home, nobody's going to air up the tires and roll it away and steal it. Like, it's there. It's there. That house is going to be there. And if it, heaven forbid, it burns to the ground, well, that insurance company's got a check to write to you. And ironically, it's a replacement. So you actually get something better. So there's a lot of things about real estate that hedge for those difficult moments. But and then, like you said, who knows what stock is? You know, I own some, but I view it as not legally gambling, but putting your hopes in something you have no control over, I think is the appropriate way to look at that.
When we have the Federal Reserve and our government can go into competition against us, then how much can you really predict? I don't know. There's, you know, quantitative easing and all that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, when they put their foot on the scale and tip it one direction or another, we're just game.
We're pawns.
You know, but whatever. It's like, it's fun. I enjoy it. It's not been the most profitable thing for me, but real estate has, and it's not going anywhere. And you can insure it. You can have, it's a vital resource. It's, you know, when you're dealing with a neighborhood that's completely built out, there's demand, there's industry, our entire economy would have to collapse. And we run into chaos where bullets and water are extremely valuable for our real estate to have significant problems. And that's a gamble that if you can't take that, then you just can't walk down the street and live a normal life. It's a safe, solid, secure way with tax protections. It's the way to go. And I think that more and more people see that. I think for a long time, there was maybe some question as to where to put your money. But now, I mean, my gosh, it's the more wacky this imaginary cyber world gets, the more we need physical, tangible, real stuff that's not going to get, you know, disrupted by AI quite as much as something else.
So nobody can click a delete button on you.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. That's a good way to put it. Yep.
Well, Chandler, I know we could go on for hours, and I want to respect your time. So do you do just Tarrant County? Is that kind of your territory that you work with?
That's our target market, but we serve anywhere in North Texas. If somebody needs to buy or sell a house, we'll help them anywhere. I just do free property tax protests in Tarrant County for now. That might change. But if it's Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, and surrounding counties for real estate, we're there.
And you've got a team. It's not just you. You have a team that supports. Right. And so you've got guys that know, I know this area, or he knows that area. Absolutely. So you have a team that can service anybody that needs to buy or sell their home.
Yep. And unlike a lot of other real estate companies out there, there are, look, I was an investor before I was a realtor, and I've got, it's a love-hate relationship, but every negative thing that an investor has to say about a realtor, I would say is true. You just have to get in touch with who you're dealing with, who your client is, and the needs and the value you can bring to the table, and be realistic that when you're dealing with an investor, if they can't make profit, then it's not going to work, and just identifying it for what it is. With that being said, the thing that's different about our real estate company is that my name is on everything. I stand behind what we do, and I'm very, very involved. I train all of our agents personally, and it's something where it's just something I don't take lightly. I eat it, breathe it. It's from the time I wake up to the time I go to sleep. If it's not real estate, it's family or God, and that's basically it. And it is a dream come true. And I'm very thankful for getting on this path.
I think great. And I do think God leads us into professions.
Yep. Absolutely. You
know, I know he did for me. And to put your name on your business, I've always said, if I ever have another business, I'm not putting my name on it, but I like hiring people that have their name on the business because their name's on the business and everybody that works for them knows that. So like McCall Property Management, like, we stand behind everything. You know, I'll take it in the shorts to make things right and lose money if it makes it right.
My mom actually gave me that advice when I was trying to figure out what name to go with. She said, hiring people that really care, that are fiscally like advanced, they want to know who they can hold accountable. Yeah. You put your name on it, that says a lot. And that's it. McCall Property Management, I tell you what, there's a lot of property managers out there that are just comfortable delivering subpar service. And the fact you put your name on it really does set you out. And I've been referring, I can give my testimony. I've been referring business to Macaw Property Management for years.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
I never had a complaint come back. You guys do a great job.
Well, if there is one, let me know so we can fix it. Because, you know, sometimes it's miscommunication or whatever, because, you know, everybody's human. But yeah, we certainly want to stand behind everything we do and treat everybody right. Because it's not just about the landlord making money or the tenant, you know, having a good, safe home to live in. I mean, we get something out of helping people. And, you know, if it's whether helping people build their wealth and income, or it's helping someone have a place to live and raise their kids. So there's a lot of ways to look at it. But anyhow, I appreciate your time so much. And I look forward to all the Chandler Crouch news coming down the pipe over the next, it sounds like 4 years.
There's some big stuff about to come out. But yeah, thank you, Kyle. Wish you the best. If you ever need anything, holler.
All right. You have a great day. Thank you.
All right. See you. Bye.